Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
From VOA Learning English, this is As It Is, Saturday. I'm Anna Mateo. Improvements in technology can save lives. Stronger buildings do not fall during storms and earthquakes. Warning systems let people know when tornadoes or tsunamis are coming. Air travel is safer because of changes in airplane technology. But even with all of these improvements, disasters, both natural and man-made, will happen. And when they do, finding victims quickly helps save lives. On the show today, we tell about the radar technology that is searching for the lost Malaysian aircraft 370. But first, a report on a search and rescue tool that is helping emergency workers find victims and recover bodies. Here's June Sims.
When a building collapses, every minute is important for victims buried under the wreckage. That is why two American government agencies teamed up to develop a high-tech tool to find those who are trapped. The Department of Homeland Security and NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, took part in the project. Rescue crews have been testing the state-of-the-art radar tool called Finder. The name is short for Finding Individuals for Disaster and Emergency Response. This radar device can recognize a person's smallest movements or even a heartbeat, even when the individual is unable to communicate. Earlier this year, Homeland Security and rescuers used Finder to carry out more than 65 test searches in the American state of Virginia. They say the tests proved successful in recognizing a human heartbeat under 9 meters of mixed concrete and other material. The device was also able to identify a heartbeat hidden behind 6 meters of solid concrete and from a distance of up to 30 meters in open space. Jim Lux is with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California.
Finder works by sending a low-power microwave signal, and it illuminates the rubble pile, and some of the microwaves go in and reflect off of the victim inside and come back out. So Finder sees both the reflection from the rubble, which doesn't move, and a very tiny reflection from the victim, which does move, because when you breathe and when your heart beats, your skin moves a little bit, and we can see that.
Jim Lux says the device is small, easy to carry, and easy to use.
It goes out and collects 30 seconds worth of data, because that's how long you need to get the heartbeat and the breathing, and then it analyzes it and displays it for the user.
Finder could be used with other tools rescuers use, such as listening devices or search dogs. Matthew Tamalo is with Virginia Task Force 1. He says the new technology could help rescuers in deciding which buildings to search.
This type of technology, including Finder, could aid in the assistance of triaging a building to say, okay, there's a strong probability that a live victim could be in here, and we need to devote our valuable human resources into searching it.
I'm June Sims.
And I'm Anna Mateo. You are listening to As It Is. Every airplane has a flight information recorder, often called a black box. This black box helps answer the question, what happened when an airplane has technical problems or crashes? But what happens when you cannot find the plane? What do you do when a plane disappears, as is the case with Malaysia Flight 370? New technology is helping to find the wreckage of planes after the search for survivors ends and a search for answers begins. Australian and U.S. Navy officials say they may have heard more signals that may have come from the black box on the missing Malaysia Airlines plane. But they say they cannot confirm where the airplane is until its wreckage is seen in the Indian Ocean. The U.S. Navy has received the most helpful information so far in the month-long search. It has a device called a pinger locator. Pings are the sound that black boxes make so that they can be found. A pinger locator identifies where the pings come from. An Australian naval ship is pulling the U.S. Navy's pinger locator in deep waters more than 1,500 kilometers northwest of Perth, Australia. Paul Nelson is with Phoenix International, the company that makes the pinger locators.
So you might hear that tiny little chirp, and we're like, did you hear something? And then we'll listen more intently and try to fine-tune it.
Fine-tuning it means turning the boat and changing position of the locator. This operation takes 8 hours. Search time is limited. The energy source for the black box does not last forever. The battery power is guaranteed to last 30 days, but can go longer. However, the sound will disappear at some point. Jim Gibson is also with Phoenix International.
The advertised shelf life for the pinger when it's in the water is 30 days. We have individuals that have been at our operations that have heard the pinger, well beyond 45 days.
Once suspected wreckage is identified, a robotic device is deployed to the area. The small device, called Remora, is controlled from the larger ship. It carries a camera that records video of the area. Remora also has a very strong mechanical arm. It picks up wreckage and puts it into a box. The box is then pulled to the surface. Remora helped in the recovery of Air France Flight 447, which crashed into the Atlantic Ocean in 2009. The aircraft was lost for 5 days. Remora recovered the plane's engines, computers, and black box. The process of finding wreckage in the ocean takes time and patience. Conditions are difficult. It is often difficult to see. The weather can cause problems too, and the pressure is extreme in deep water. Mr. Nelson says finding a wrecked airplane in the ocean is like trying to find a needle in a haystack, even with modern technology. I'm Anna Mateo. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. Almost 270 people are still missing from a boat that sank off the southern coast of South Korea. Most of the missing are high school students. The South Korean ferry Sewol was carrying about 475 passengers. It sank Wednesday morning near the island of Jindo. More than 25 people are confirmed dead. Rescuers have saved more than 175 people, but hopes of finding more survivors are decreasing. Some of the passengers jumped into the water and were rescued by ships. Rescue teams and helicopters pulled others from the boat. Student Kim Tae-yeon survived. He said, "I held a handrail and moved toward the right side of the ferry to ride a helicopter as water kept coming in." Another survivor, Cha Eun-oh, described the situation on the boat. "I was keeping still without making any movement. There was an announcement that we should not move." Oh Pyeong-won is the father of a missing student. Like many parents, he expressed anger about the search effort. He said there was no rescue effort on Wednesday. He said emergency workers could not get into the ferry. He said they just dove around the area. Chu Kyung-mi is related to a missing student. She said too much time has passed. She said they should have rescued the children on the day it happened. What are they doing now? 3 days have passed. She said they must be cold and scared deep underwater. Divers could not enter the ship during several rescue attempts. The water in the area is dark and cold with a strong current. 3 divers were caught in a current and later rescued. The release of incorrect information has made it more difficult for parents. Soon after the boat sank, South Korean officials reported all of the students and most of the other passengers had been rescued. But a little later, officials said many fewer people were rescued than first reported. When the ship began to sink, survivors said the ferry operators told passengers not to move. The media reported of text messages from survivors trapped in the ferry. The reports were later withdrawn. South Korean media reported that the ship captain was one of the first people to leave the ship. Lee Chun-so was shown on Korean TV with his head down in an attempt to hide his face. Lee said that he was extremely sorry and did not know what to say. It is still not clear what caused the ferry to sink. Rescued passengers said they heard a loud noise before the ship began to sink. This led people to guess that the ferry hit a rock. The Coast Guard also said that the ferry did not follow the path suggested by officials. Captain Lee told a newspaper that he did not hit anything. Kim Han-sik is president of the company that operates the ferry. He has publicly apologized. He said executives and employees of the Cheonghae-jin Marine Office have committed a grave sin. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter.
Now, the Special English Program, American Stories.
Thank you.
Today we tell a traditional American story called A Tall Tale. A tall tale is a story about a person who is larger than life. The descriptions in the story are exaggerated, much greater than in real life. Long ago, the people who settled in undeveloped areas in America first told tall tales. After a hard day's work, people gathered to tell each other funny stories. Pecos Bill was a larger-than-life hero of the American West. No one knows who first told stories about Pecos Bill. Cowboys may have invented the stories. Others say Edward O'Reilly invented the character in stories he wrote for The Century magazine in the early 1900s. The stories were collected in a book called The Saga of Pecos Bill, published in 1923. Another writer, James Cloyd Bowman, wrote an award-winning children's book called Pecos Bill, the Greatest Cowboy of All Time. The book won the Newbery Honor in 1938. Pecos Bill was not a historical person, but he does represent the spirit of early settlers in the American West. His unusual childhood and extraordinary actions tell about people who believed there were no limits to what they could do. Now, here is Barbara Klein with our story.
Pecos Bill had one of the strangest childhoods a boy ever had. It all started after his father decided that there was no longer enough room in East Texas for his family.
"Pack up, Ma," he cried. "Neighbors moving in 50 miles away. It's getting too crowded."
So they loaded up a wagon with all their things. Now some say they had 15 children, while others say 18. However many there were, the children were louder than thunder. And as they set off across the wild country of West Texas, their mother and father could hardly hear a thing. Now, as they came to the Pecos River, the wagon hit a big rock. The force threw little Bill out of the wagon, and he landed on the sandy ground. Mother did not know Bill was gone until she gathered the children for the midday meal. Mother set off with some of the children to look for Bill, but they could find no sign of him. Well, some people say Bill was just a baby when his family lost him. Others say he was 4 years old. But all agree that a group of animals called coyotes found Bill and raised him. Bill did all the things those animals did, like chase lizards and howl at the moon. He became as good a coyote as any. Now, Bill spent 17 years living like a coyote until one day a cowboy rode by on his horse. Some say the cowboy was one of Bill's brothers. Whoever he was, he took one look at Bill and asked, "What are you?" Bill was not used to human language. At first, he could not say anything. The cowboy repeated his question. This time, Bill said, "Varmint." That is a word used for any kind of wild animal.
"No, you aren't," said the cowboy.
"Yes, I am," said Bill. "I have fleas."
Lots of people have fleas, said the cowboy. You don't have a tail. Yes, I do, said Bill. Show it to me then, the cowboy said. Bill looked at his backside and realized that he did not have a tail like the other coyotes. Well, what am I then? Asked Bill. You're a cowboy, so start acting like one, the cowboy cried out. Well, that was all Bill needed to hear. He said goodbye to his coyote friends and left to join the world of humans. Now, Pecos Bill was a good cowboy. Still, he hungered for adventure. One day, he heard about a rough group of men. There is some debate over what the group was called, but one storyteller calls it the Hell's Gate Gang. So Bill set out across the rough country to find this gang of men. Well, Bill's horse soon was injured, so Bill had to carry it for 100 miles. Then Bill met a rattlesnake 50 feet long. The snake made a hissing noise and was not about to let Bill pass. But after a tense minute, Bill beat the snake until it surrendered. He felt sorry for the varmint, though, and wrapped it around his arm. After Bill walked another 100 miles, he came across an angry mountain lion. There was a huge battle, but Bill took control of the big cat and put his saddle on it. He rode that mountain lion all the way to the camp of the Hell's Gate Gang. Now, when Bill saw the gang, he shouted out, "Who's the boss around here?" A huge cowboy, 9 feet tall, took one look at Bill and said in a shaky voice,
"I was the boss, but you are the boss from here on in."
With his gang, Pecos Bill was able to create the biggest ranch in the Southwest. Bill and his men had so many cattle that they needed all of New Mexico to hold them. Arizona was the pasture where the cattle ate grass. Pecos Bill invented the art of being a cowboy. He invented the skill of throwing a special rope called a lasso over a cow's head to catch wandering cattle. Some say he used a rattlesnake for a lasso. Others say he made a lasso so big that it circled the whole earth. Bill invented the method of using a hot branding iron to permanently put the mark of a ranch on a cow's skin. That helped stop people from stealing cattle. Some say he invented cowboy songs to help calm the cattle and make the cowboy's life easier. But he is also said to have invented tarantulas and scorpions as jokes. Cowboys have had trouble with those poisonous creatures ever since. Now, Pecos Bill could ride anything that ever was. So, as some tell the story, there came a storm bigger than any other. It all happened during the worst drought the West had ever seen. It was so dry that horses and cows started to dry up and blow away in the wind. So when Bill saw the windstorm, he got an idea. The huge tornado kicked across the land like a wild bronco. But Bill jumped on it without a thought. He rode that tornado across Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona, all the time squeezing the rain out of it to save the land from drought. When the storm was over, Bill fell off the tornado. He landed in California. He left a hole so deep that to this day it is known as Death Valley. Now, Bill had a horse named Widowmaker. He got that name because any man who rode that horse would be thrown off and killed, and his wife would become a widow. No one could ride that horse but Bill. And Widowmaker, in the end, caused the biggest problem for Pecos Bill. You see, one day, Bill saw a woman. Not just any woman, but a wild, red-haired woman riding a giant catfish down the Rio Grande River. Her name was Slewfoot Sue, and Bill fell in love with her at first sight. Well, Bill would not rest until he had asked for her hand in marriage, and Slewfoot Sue accepted. On their wedding day, Pecos Bill dressed in his best buckskin suit, and Sue wore a beautiful white dress with a huge steel spring bustle in the back. It was the kind of big dress that many women wore in those days, the bigger the better. Now, after the marriage ceremony, Slewfoot Sue got a really bad idea. She decided that she wanted to ride Widowmaker. Bill begged her not to try, but she had her mind made up. Well, the second she jumped on the horse's back, he began to kick and buck like nothing anyone had ever seen. He sent Sue flying so high that she sailed clear over the new moon. She fell back to earth, but the steel spring bustle just bounced her back up as high as before. Now, there are many different stories about what happened next. One story says Bill saw that Sue was in trouble. She would keep bouncing forever if nothing was done. So he took his rope out, though some say it was a huge rattlesnake, and lassoed Sue to catch her and bring her down to earth. Only she just bounced him back up with her. Somehow the two came to rest on the moon, and that's where they stayed. Some people say they raised a family up there. Their children were as loud and wild as Bill and Sue were in their younger days. People say the sound of thunder that sometimes carries over the dry land around the Pecos River is nothing more than Pecos Bill's family laughing up a storm.
This tall tale of Pecos Bill was adapted for Special English and produced by Mario Ritter. Your storyteller was Barbara Klein. I'm Steve Ember.
Yippee-i-o, for the toughest critter west of the Alamo.
Once there was a drought that spread all over Texas, so to sunny California he did go.